Alrighty, alright, okay. We bomb a bomb bomb. This is a podcast brief from MichaelManicotti.com. Today, on the subject of my podcast, we're going to be discussing why I think I'm so creative. Ha. Notice how I said think, because the following things I'm about to explain might explain my behavior and that I might not actually be good at anything or creative at all. I might just think I am. And so the subject of this podcast is going to explain why I think that. So let's get down to business. The first thing I'm going to say is, yeah, so if you're a fan, I'd be curious to hear from true fans. Not that I care, but I just thought I'd throw that in there and hear what you think about this. And again, everything I express in this podcast, solely my opinions based on real events that have occurred in my life. Shit like that. And I'm trying to get this camera. If you're watching on my website, MichaelManicotti.com, then you can see my bright, sunshiny, ghost-like face. So, basically, you know, I'm not saying I am, but I think I am. I think I can. You know, my content I put in here, that it may never find an audience or provide any value at all, but in the event that it doesn't, I wanted to let you know why I think and act the way that I do. Okay? This kind of is like a little foundation for how I arrived at my current disposition. So here goes. The reasons why I think I'm creative. Point number one. On the subject of disposition, my genetic predisposition. So I come from a long line of creatives, alcoholics, and salesmen, basically. And this can be a dangerous combination in a good way, or a, you know, bad combination in a good way. So basically, this allows me to formulate my own set of rules and criteria for which to live my life by and sell everyone else on my ideals. You know, my mother and father were not alcoholics, but my mother is wildly creative. I get my wild hair from her. And my dad is a master salesman with relentless inner drive. So the genes I got from them gave me the ability to create and then monetize it, figure out how to monetize it by way of my dad's ambition. Because he was so ambitious, I take my mom's creative side and then, you know, I inject whatever kind of thing into it so that I can make a living from what I do. And, you know, I don't know what I heard recently. It says you can't make people, you can't force them to be ambitious. You either got it or you don't. And, you know, this part of it is, actually I heard a comedian says this, that, you know, people can be born lazy. And, you know, I kind of agree with that. I don't think that, you know, you can just get up in the morning and constantly, you know, as I say in one of my songs, I say, actually, I might release this later. It's a song I wrote called Success. And basically, I say in the song that, you know, you go from failure to failure with no change in behavior. And I mean, what if I told you that your job is going to consist of waking up every day and being rejected? Wake up every day and fail. That's your job. You're going to wake up every day and fail, and I'm not even going to pay you for it. You know, you're going to try things, and most of them are not going to work out. And you have to find some way to continue on. And, you know, go through the snow-filled pass, like I've said. And, you know, and I think that comes from genetic predisposition. You know, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but like, you know, in my line, my bloodline, we got a lot of people that were pretty rowdy. And, you know, they still lived long lives despite their behavior and the things they put into their body. And I'm not saying that's a good idea or that it didn't cause problems. I'm just saying that there's something that allowed them to live. And that probably had something to do with the genes. So I'll probably be the motherfucker who did everything wrong and gets to live to be 105 years old because you know, probably because I'll be tortured to keep be here stuck on the planet that long. But if you were to look at it from a longevity standpoint, strictly biological, physiological, it goes down to the genes. So point two on why I think I'm so creative. Oh, I forgot to show y'all. So this is pretty thorough. We got 4 pages, 7 points. So right there. And so point two is that I've faced a lot of failures that have forced me to find creative ways to succeed. You know, when I was making this point sheet, I thought about making a list of all the shit that didn't work out for me, but it's depressing, so I'm not going to do that right now. And it is. I mean, you know, I like to focus on the fact of the successes I'm having. You know, the success of being able to create and get something done is the biggest success in the world. The next biggest success when you're creative is having your art or your work reach people and inspire them. You know, if you're listening to this, then I hope it does help you with whatever you got going on in your life. And, you know, that can be a drain for a guy like me because we're given everything we have. And then, you know, I've talked about before, a gal looks at me and she says, you know, well, what do you have for yourself? You got all these touches that you put on humanity or whatever and society and these different things that you've done and you know, you're known and all this kind of stuff. But what do you have for you? And it's kind of true because, you know, I sit here and I'm sitting behind a brand, and there's a lot of reasons we create brands because we want to create some separation between who we are and who we interface with in the public. But this doesn't mean you're being fake. It just means that you're putting it in a package that people can digest. And the brand that I'm creating right now is that I want it to be all of who I am pretty much. So the writing and all this kind of stuff and the podcasts and the music and just all these things that every other person is trying to do them in their own way. And showing people that this is what it is to be an artist. You are outside the box. There is not an infrastructure that exists for you. Matter of fact, I read a statistic today that talked about it was this guy's podcast who has a great podcast that's specific to like music production and engineering and some of the more like geeky, gritty stuff for people who are producers that, you know, most of the general public wouldn't get. But I saw it on his website and he talked about all these artists that go on these TV shows to sing their songs and be famous or whatever, but that their album sales didn't do as well as the artists that came up truly from the bottom. You know, guys like me, you know, nobody has really helped me. And I'll talk about that in other podcasts. And this has been part of my failure dossier. You know, all the times where I've gone down tracks and gone down roads and only to be led to a dead end road or, you know, who knows, you know, just all kinds of scenarios. And I guess my point was is that the artists that were on the show, like I said, they weren't really producing the numbers and the longevity. They didn't have it because they didn't figure out how to do these things. You know, maybe I'll be the leader for the genreless artist, the guy that just creates shit. And, you know, somebody will pay me $10,000 for a guitar that I put my artwork on back here. You know, and also pay me $10,000 to do a show. Who knows? To give a speech, to do a podcast in front of a live audience because I know how to talk. and formulate my thoughts in a package, a brand, so that most people can understand it. And I even thought about that. I was like, you know, I'm listening to my podcasts and, you know, I write very gritty. You know, there's profanity in here. There's all kinds of shit in here. And I get a little bit shell-shocked when I read it because I know it's going to capture people's attention. And I think that's part of the goal. I'm not doing it to do that. I'm doing it because that's how I felt in that moment as an artist. But I know that me speaking in that voice and not in a, you know, non-offensive, not a neutral voice that appeals to everybody, when you do that, that has no appeal. Because that's what everybody does. Nobody wants to piss anybody off. Nobody wants to be offensive. Nobody wants to tell the truth. So how about that? It's not even about all the other shit. It's about telling the truth. And so I've had to find creative ways to do that. And what I learned from the process of people telling me no is how to get them to say yes to whatever it is that I'm trying to do. You know, whether it's making my, quote, product better, or selling to the right audience instead of the wrong one, or saving money to take risks that nobody else will take. You know, I have to find creative ways to do this. I've lost a lot of money in my life. I've made a lot of money, but I've lost probably more because of shit that I did that thought would be a good idea. You know, I talk about different events that I've played or events I've participated in where you go to these conferences and you're trying to hawk your wares, so to speak, and, you know, show people what you got, and then they tell you they're going to do something and then they don't because you're not kissing their ass. You're not going and getting drunk with them. You're not being part of the in crowd. You're focused on your art. And, you know, these are the types of things that can lead you to these successes because you see it for what it is and not what they're presenting it to be. They're trying to sell you on a concept that is not realistic. You know, I'm not going to spend 10, 20 grand participating in all these fucking events just so I can get exposure to people that don't appreciate me. And that's a universal human theme. Like, I don't want to be there if you don't want me there. I mean, you're not my tribe. You're not my audience. And, don't take it personal. Nothing. I don't have anything against you, but we're not the same kind of people. You know, so I talk in the podcast about the dating apps that essentially you're selling to the wrong audience. And the product that they see is not what it actually is. But, I mean, I guess it's a little bit different in the case of art because what they see is what they get. But if it's not universally accepted by the other peers, it doesn't detract from the importance of the art. It just means that the other peers, somebody hadn't stood up and told them it was acceptable, but they all believe it, you know? And, you know, it's just like even on a smaller level, like being able to, you know, you hear all these. The commonly held thing is that you got to get your guitar and go cut your teeth around town, and you know you got to get exposure. You know, we want to give you exposure, and I always say, well, I don't want exposure to people that don't appreciate my work. I don't want exposure to people that don't want to pay me for the value I provide. I don't want exposure to them. Gal says she wants a hat and a t-shirt, and she's gonna wear it. Okay, it's $25. And then she's like, well, she don't want it anymore. She's not my audience. She doesn't see value in that. And that's a whole nother story for a whole nother day because, you know, I mean, there's all kinds of fake chicks out there like that. And, you know, I'd rather give my t-shirt and a hat to some kid, to somebody who appreciates my work. I'm not going to say I'm going to give it to them either because if they like it, they're going to go get their lunch money and bring it to me. You know, you got to find creative ways to market yourself. You know, it might be repackaging a said, quote, product or spending time analyzing the mistakes to see what you could have done differently to make for a better outcome. Got a lot of examples of this. Maybe you don't cut the whole line of business. Maybe you just reduce the amount that you put into it. There's something called the law of diminishing returns. And basically, as the factory gets bigger and produces more widgets, if the economies of scale can potentially go in the inverse direction. Because for whatever reason, you can't produce that much output. So maybe the best thing to go is to create a higher value product that produces more income for less cost. So your profit margin is higher. Instead of getting a 5% profit margin, you got a 40% profit margin. That's a great business, and you're able to generate the kind of dollars you're looking for and then move on to opening other lines of business. Keeping your business in check. Go listen to that podcast. And I talk about ideas on how to do that and to preserve your capital. But the bottom line is that failure has taught me not only what to do and what to improve on. It's forced me to think critically on what works and what doesn't and where I can get better. I mean, I'm always trying to get better. Even when I started doing the podcast, like right now, I know what I got on my plate. I mean, for the sake of workflow, I'm getting it done, but it's going to be a work in progress. But it's better than nothing. And this is the process. So, I had one camera, then I did two cameras, and now I'm changing them a little bit better. Maybe I'll add a filter to my white ass face. I don't know, but this is how I am presenting myself in the raw form. I think there's something special about that. And locations, the lighting in the background, I realized my LED light was fucking up the exposure, so I had to move it over there. And then I got this light here shining on my face, and this camera in front of me looks real good, but the one to the side's a little bit different. So maybe I got to get another one of these, but see, that costs money. So I got to find a creative way to get that money so I can buy more equipment. All right. Point number three on why I think I'm so creative. You're going to love this point. It's totally what you don't expect, but I have sustained several massive head injuries. I think sometimes my behavior is indicative of some things that may or may not be a result of this. I don't know. I mean, I'm not crazy or anything, but I'll just tell you what's happened. And I can give you kind of a little rundown of some of the things that in my mind, how I reconcile certain things that I do. Mainly as it associates for, if I drink or something like that, like, why am I medicating? Like, why is it like that? Like, why do you feel like you have to do that to, ease the pressure or whatever? It's not always like that, but I don't think that's a normal activity to want to drink, excessively or a couple times a week or every night, regardless of if it's in moderation or not. There's no moderation about drinking every night, regardless how much it is. So I said, funny enough, I've had a few blows to my head, both in childhood, my adolescence, and adulthood that I think may have impacted my current creative state. And I think it might have happened. It might have been for the better. I'm not going to say I'm crazy, but I do think that sometimes the river in my head has a hard time finding its way to the ocean. So, at the core, I am a normal functioning human. But sometimes, like I said, I might have temporary lapses where, whatever reason, I'll go into that later, but whether it's me forgetting shit or whatever the fuck. But I said the first blow came when a massive glass water jug full of pennies fell on my head and busted on the floor. I was like 3 years old. So it like rolled off the table and hit me in those huge water jugs used to be made out of glass, not plastic. But despite what they're made out of, if they have 50, 60 pounds of weight in them and it falls on your head, that's going to cause probably. I mean, a doctor said I was fine, but how do we know that? So the container busted and all the pennies went everywhere. And, you know, I was crying, obviously, because that's fucking hurts at any age. Yeah, nothing about that sounds good, I'll put in here. But the second happened when I was about 12 years old. Notice the first one happened when I was a child, so a baby essentially. And you have to look at what your developmental state is then as well. Like we always talk about the reason why dudes don't get their shit together till they're in their mid-20s, late-20s, because their frontal lobe hasn't developed, which is all those things, temporal, spatial reasoning. You know, all these things that have to do with our vision and what we see ourselves to be and what we want to do with our lives. And actually, I think chicks are similar. Like, just a little side note, when I'm involved with chicks, I notice, like, I don't really mess with too many chicks that are real young anymore because, like, in their 20s and shit, because of this reason. They don't really have their shit together. They don't know what they don't have their, a lot of them don't even have rules in place. Like, it's funny, this, well, there's a lot of stories I have on that. I was about to go into a diatribe on one, but, you know, basically, gals, I always say that you can't trust a girl under the age of 25 because they will do these childlike things and then rationalize it in their mind when they're clearly not okay, you know, cheating on their boyfriends and, you know, whatever, talking to you on the phone when they have a boyfriend, or then they'll ghost you because their boyfriend got mad and he found the text messages, you know, all this kind of shit like that. That's childish shit. But going back to the point about mental development, so when you're a youngster and something happens, it could potentially set you up for something in the future. So when I was, the second time I had a massive head injury, I was 12 years old. And my sister had made a catapult contraption for her physics class. And basically it was a catapult that was using a gravity hinge meant for a gate. So it's supposed to fall down. It's not supposed to be used sideways because gravity doesn't go that direction. Not that the latch was designed for. And the latch came loose with two high tension springs from like a garage door opener or whatever. And it hit me right in the face. So it went bam, just like that. And it put, you know, a huge 2x4 mark right in my face. And I'm lucky it didn't break my nose. And of course, the emergency room had all kinds of shit to say about that. It's kind of funny, that time I was going to this school and we had a field day and, you know, one of these girls painted an anarchy sign on my cheek, which ended up getting sunburned. So there was an anarchy sign on my face in sunburn when I went to the emergency room. So that's kind of a funny story in itself. So I'm sure they weren't surprised. But I said, no, it had nothing to do with anarchy. It was literally just a fucking physics class that went out of control. But when that happened, I blacked out for like 2 minutes. I mean, I think that I was actually on the ground for maybe like a minute or two, and I'll have to see, I don't really remember. So you'd have to ask somebody else. And matter of fact, I could call a chick right now and I could bring this up and literally pipe her into the system and get her to tell the story. I mean, she'd be laughing at me the whole time because she just likes to laugh at me for obvious reasons. But, she could tell you the story. And I think she told me, or someone else told me, that I was knocked out for a while. But I remember just being dazed, like totally dazed, lost my vision for like probably a minute or something, maybe two. But let's just say it was 2 minutes where I was just starry-eyed, whatever. Couldn't see. So, doctor checked me out. I don't remember if they did an x-ray or not, but they sent me home because, you know, I didn't have signs of a concussion or whatever, but that would be saved for a later time. I think I was about 19. Could have been 18, could have been 17. I think it was about 18 or 19. No, I went to a house party, and long story short, one of the people I was with started to jump off with some other guy, and the guy I was with started whipping this guy's ass. And then for whatever reason, this altercation poured out into the street, and I'm just going to be vague about it and say that we all got our asses kicked by a huge mob of people. And there are some details to that story that I don't really need to disclose that were told to me by other people, but we definitely stood our ground. So it wasn't all for naught, but I did get knocked out. I got knocked out cold, and all I remember is like waking up in the middle of the street, just throwing up, or on the sidewalk, or I don't fucking, somewhere like by the curb, because I basically got curb stomped. But when I finally. I think the biggest thing was is that they dropped me off at my house and I passed out, went to sleep, and I woke up the next day and I didn't really think anything of it until I saw the look on my sister's face. I'd never seen anybody look at me like that. She like a cross between a terrified look and a concerned look. And I had my shirt off and I was covered in welts and everything. I mean, I had gotten my ass whooped. So, basically, I explained that I think I got in a fight last night, and she just said, "Yeah, it looks like you got your ass kicked." And so then I called my buddy, the one who was the subject of this altercation, which started all this off. And I guess in reality, I shouldn't have been hanging out with him in the first place because I didn't really know him, but he was pretty fucking cool. So he told me what happened, and that's when the story came into fruition. And I can't remember whether he said it or I said it, but I told him, yeah, I was throwing up and stuff. I remember that I was doing it, but he told me all the way home I was throwing up in the car and they had to clean it up. And it could have been, you know, combined with the fact that I was consuming alcohol, but I don't remember drinking it that much to be throwing up. So, plus my tolerance is ridiculously high, but especially now. But he told me that, I guess at that point, the concussion thing came up. So I went to the doctor and he did in fact confirm that I had a concussion. So, you know, they had to keep an eye on me and shit like that. So I think that this might have to do with some of the reasons why I get a little bit irritable. But I figured out a way to challenge it, you know, not challenge it, channel it. And, you know, I've never had any like wild fucking violent outbursts or anything like that, because I'm not that type of person. But I think this affected me. For sure. Or it just has a placebo effect, but, you know, who knows? I'm not a doctor, but I would be curious to get a CAT scan of my head. So point four. This is just what I believe, okay? These are solely my beliefs. All right, I'm not saying that this is a... I mean, just let me read it, and you can, you know, fuck off after I read it. But so when I was about in middle school, yeah, like around the time that the catapult hit me in the face, it might have been before that, before or after anyway, I was administered a hepatitis booster shot. It was a round of shots. I got three of them in my ass. Because the doctor said, whatever the fuck, at that time point in time, it was a commonly held belief that everybody needed a hepatitis shot. So, I got this shot. Hold on a sec. And more technical shit. I'm just trying to keep an eye on my little thing here. Okay. So, you know, this is one of those things that the doctor, the other camera turned off. Jesus, stressing me out. This is one of those things the doctor recommended, but I really don't think it was a good idea, because all this material and proven science suggests that the Marisol or mercury has been put in the vaccine either as part of a conspiracy or to merely as an inert ingredient to preserve the said anecdotes. So there's a commonly held I'm not even going to say it's a theory, because there's a lot of scientific evidence behind it that suggests that a lot of these shots are fucking people up. Okay, and I don't know who's responsible for it or what the reason is for. Some people say they're trying to dumb down the population. Some people say that, they're trying to have population control, or some people want people to contract diseases, chronic illnesses, so that the pharmaceutical companies can give them drugs and charge them for them. And there's a lot of truth to that. If you really look at all the stuff that's out there, the evidence, the science, I'm not talking about articles on the internet or whatever. I'm talking about like peer reviewed papers and shit, that this shit is happening. And, for starters, let's just do a little segment of it. Like if you go to some foreign countries, the food and the disease rate is a lot lower and they don't have a higher standard of living. Okay. And why is that? You know, I can just tell you from being in Mexico that the food there is better. And a lot of places, they don't grow it with GMO and all this kind of other shit, because the people, like the Mayans and stuff, especially when you're around their turf, they don't grow their food in that way. And it may be because it's too expensive to do it. It may be because they want sovereignty and independence and they don't want people telling them what they can grow. But there is a lot of truth to that. And even on that note, I could speak to the cigarettes. The brand I smoke in America, in Mexico, not only do they cost a fraction of the price in Mexico because they don't have all the taxes, but something is different. They're not as addictive. And I come back to America and it's like heroin or something. I don't have an experience with hard drugs, but like I said, I've known people who have done that shit. And, you know, I say once you've subjected yourself to it, it's hard to get off it. And it's because something is being chemically formulated that way. So when I go back to the booster shot that I took, a lot of these shots have this shit in them called thimerosal, which is a mercury-based preservative. Well, mercury is not healthy for an individual in any amount. It is a heavy metal that fries your brain circuitry. So, you know, whatever the case, it is with this shit and this booster shot, I can tell you that after I was administered that booster series as a teenager, I never felt the same mentally. Something changed. Like, it almost took a little bit of my spark away. And how do I explain that? I mean, I know my body. I knew my body then. You know what I mean? I know when something's not right, especially if you're a kid, something's wrong, you cry, right? You know, when you're a baby, you know something's wrong, you're going to cry. It's the same way. I was saying something's wrong. I don't know what it is. I think that's what it was. So I say I've never felt the same mentally, and I'm pretty sure it dropped my IQ a solid letter grade, because even I never really like struggled with school, but I did struggle in high school a lot. Well, maybe I shouldn't say a lot, but, you know, some things were more difficult than they should have been, it seems like. And I'm sure my parents would attest to that. But the bottom line is that something changed after that happened, and I don't know what. Whatever it is, I can't hit the reset button on it. And fortunately, I think my brain has made enough connections to begin to become a contributing member or continual contributing member of society. But I really want to believe that I could have possibly won my clairvoyant badge if I had not been administered that serum. And a clairvoyant is someone who can like see into the future and shit like that. And, you know, I know there's some people that have those kind of powers or whatever, you know, telepathy and just this higher mental ability because we apparently only use a fraction of our brain. But yeah, so that speaks to that point. So you can make with that what you will, but I encourage you to just Google that shit. I mean, you know, it's not that far-fetched. You know, this whole thing about, I mean, everybody always wants to discredit things, but, you know, at the end of the day, they're serving you that information, just like I'm serving you information. You know, this is my side of the story. You can take with it what you will or not take it. You can be a partial subscriber or a total subscriber. You know, there's a lot of people that I watch different shit or read different books, and I don't believe everything they're saying or you know, support what they're saying. But I can still take some of what they say and take it to heart and do something with it. So, yeah, I was going to say the other one is fluoride in the water supply. People think that fluoride in the toothpaste and all this kind of shit is a good thing. It's great for your teeth. And, I can't speak to that because I'm not a dentist, but I can tell you for a fact that it is a neurotoxin that was used in the water supply to make the Jews docile during World War II. The Nazis took fluoride and poured it into the drinking water, and it made the Jews docile and not want to fight back in the concentration camps. So that's a fact that is not disputable at all. So, you know, if they're doing that there, or they did that there, and now they're putting it in the water here or in your toothpaste, what's the reason for that? So yeah, so I'm gonna come up with my own fluoride free brand of toothpaste, and yeah, so all right, so point five, what makes me so creative, the use of alcohol and cannabis. And every artist has some story about this. You know, I can't say that these things are positive, and honestly, I wish I didn't do them, but through their use, I have in fact created some great ass material. Not only does it give me shit to talk about when I'm sober, because all the shit that happened when I wasn't, but I was able to open up a window and resolve some components of different songs that were not apparent to me in a sober state. I've written some songs that, you know, maybe I'll release something sinister one day, but I talk about the angel devil and I speak about that song specifically, but I remember exactly where I was when I made that. And, you know, I was loaded, and I went back to the hotel, and, you know, I decided I was going to record some music, and I had a little delusion of grandeur in my head, and it turned into that song, which is fucking badass, and I can't wait to play it at a massive festival. But, I actually wrote most of the song sober, but it initially started with that inebriated moment. But there's also been songs and different things, you know, even, well, I've got a song called What High People Think About. That entire thing I made stoned. I wrote the song or produced it because it doesn't have words or anything. It's an electronic music song, but I made that. I was stoned off my ass in Mexico in my camper. And then I recorded all the footage. The footage was recorded sober, but I edited it when I was stoned. So it probably only makes sense to me, but fuck, it feels good. And it brings back a lot of memories for me and other people that were with me there at that time. So, yeah, say, well, maybe, yeah, so it opens up a window, a different window to whatever it is. That gives you just a slight edge. It can, it doesn't always, but some cases it does. So I said, you start sober, but sometimes I finish wasted. Maybe that's the title of one of my books. Or yeah, start wasted, finish sober. That'd probably be more, probably a little bit better, more widely accepted. So I said, it works to an extent. And you just have to decide to what extent that you're going to do that as an artist. You know, I recorded two sets one time performing with my band just to see if it did make a difference. I was strictly curious if being sober and being toasted would make a difference. And I videotaped it, and the second set we did was noticeably better. I mean, and we were loaded. So, you know, tequilas and and all that shit. So I said, I'd like to attribute that to the fact that we were bombing tequila and Dos Equis. And yeah, so it, I mean, it was better. It could have been because the confidence, you know, you get the what I like to call alcohol luck. You know, that's an event, a word that I invented, phrase, whatever. And it's what happens when you consume and you don't get suffer a consequence for it. So in that case, got lucky with my sound because of the alcohol. And, you know, another more real life example would be you would experience alcohol luck, to put it into a situational setting. If you drive home drunk and you don't get busted by the police, you know, you experienced an episode of alcohol luck. You got out of it. You didn't get busted. But that doesn't mean you, it won't happen in the future. I'm just saying. Okay. Point six on why I think I'm so creative. This is going to be a long podcast, but it's important. I'm not afraid to be who I am not. Notice how I said I'm not afraid to be who I'm not, and not that I'm not afraid to be who I am. And I guess they're really the same thing, because it means that I'm not afraid to let the music speak through me, regardless of what it says and in whatever voice in which it's presented. You know, you get a lot of people who say that, oh, well, because you look this way or you play guitar, you can't rap. Or because you rap, you can't do singer-songwriter. And this is true to a lot of people, because they try to do that because they can't do it. But I can do it. I can do all those things with a pretty significant level of mastery. So much though that when I get called out sometimes and people put on my songs, like up at the bar, and they dig the song and they don't even know who it's by. And then somebody will say, he wrote that song. And they're like, what? He wrote that song? And because I'm showing up in a gray t-shirt in my swim trunks, all of a sudden I don't have any credibility, you know. And this is what we're trying to fight against, right? Is this kind of shit, because that has nothing to do with artistry. That has to do with image and celebrity. But that's for another podcast. But I said in here, if I want to rap, I rap. If I want to sing or songwrite, I sing or songwrite. You know, I don't let the brand or a specific identity or social pressure determine the type of art that I'm going to create. And that's why I said I'm not afraid to be who I'm not. If someone who, quote, knows me, sees me in a resting state as a normal person doing normal shit, I'm not afraid to break that perception when I create. You know, and I've got a friend, he's a blues musician, and he gets up there in the zoot suit and does that whole deal. And when you see him like in his resting state, people would say that's not him. And, but it is. That's his artist. So I said, sure, you get a whole lot of naysayers that say you're not this and that type people, but that has nothing to do with creating art, and that resides on another that has nothing to do with creating art that resides on another plane of existence. So we're not operating in the same lunar landscape the rest of everybody else is, and therefore we don't have the same set of rules. People don't get that, but I get it. And that's why my shit is great, in my honest opinion, or above average. That was funny. My friend, I was, I guess he knew a guy that was going to do some work on this property that I owned. And I said, well, how is he? You know, is he pretty good? He said, yeah, he's slightly above average. And I'm like, what? Like, yeah, like I go back to the pilot reference. Do you want a pilot that's slightly above average that only occasionally crashes airplanes? But, you know, you see what I'm saying. Yeah, so let's go to the second point, seventh point. And I'm actually going to pause this and save real quick. Give me one sec. Yeah, I always get paranoid. I'm going to lose everything I recorded, so because that happened one time, so I'm going to keep doing it. But like I said, it's all about refinement and shit like that, so I'll get better as I go. So it's point seven. I understand the current societal order. This speaks to point six of I'm not afraid to be who I'm not. Okay, I know that sometimes we have to operate within a system to survive, and I'm really fucking good at doing that. My friends have commented on that, you know, I can get my message across within a system that is not prepared to accept that. So I talk about the peso going into the quarter machine. You know what I mean? Sometimes I can make a peso look like a quarter. And, you know, you even know this shit. Like, if you were a little kid, you would take some of the money from some foreign countries had a little hole in it, and you could take that shit and wrap it around a string, or take a piece of tape and affix it to the side of a quarter and put it in the machine, the whatever machine you wanted to do this with, usually the ones with the toy claw thing, and you could convince the machine, you could get it to play the game and then pull the quarter back out and keep doing it. I think they've probably figured that out since now. That's why everything is like swipe card when you go to the arcade, but it's kind of the same thing. So, you know, I'm really good at that. This is why I create this brand. And I guess you could say to a certain degree, if you put the quarter in there, it's conning everybody, but it's conning the system, which is not supposed to be there anyways, because it's bullshit. So in my eyes, it's really just, you know, leading the charge on something needs to be done anyways. So this is why I created this brand. You know, I know that if all the information is presented, people are more likely to accept it because it's a complete product that people can contextualize, okay? So if I'm sitting here and they say he's nuts because of one fucking thing I said, and they never looked at any of my other content, which is totally valid, you know, they could look at this and say, oh, well, he's that way because, well, look at these things, you know? He had a lot of failures, so he had to find a way to succeed, combine the fact that he was hit in the head when he was a child. I mean, I'm down with that, you know? Because people are going to say whatever they want anyways. So I'm getting out ahead of it, and I'm just telling you who I am, so there's no questions. But if I present all this information, this involves being creative and figuring out new ways to do old shit. I'm really no different than any other great artist. I just know how to manipulate the levers a little bit better than most. So, you know, a lot of artists are amazing, but they don't understand business. That's the system that you got to figure out how to work within, you know, until you can get in there and fuck it up, you know, become that disruptor that people talk about that hadn't come along yet, which is why I'm doing this. You know, I know that people also need to see the pop shots and the memes, as well as more in-depth material that articulates how you arrived at whatever thought or belief that you're presenting. You know, I've seen memes and fucking crazy shit by people, you know, artists and everybody else that started out as a meme or something, but it hooked me on who they were. Which is so funny because it speaks to there's no such thing as bad publicity, because people are going to get your message, and you think that you're saying some bullshit about them, but maybe they resonate with what you're saying. So that's why I think it's kind of funny, because these guys, they get up on TV and they're going to try to character assassinate some guy that's got wild ideals. And what they do is they end up waking up the sleeping giant. That's what they do. And so they're really not doing shit. Matter of fact, this one guy, he was doing a major network program that since got canceled because of that, because the establishment said, you're having all these motherfuckers on who are telling the truth and making us look stupid, so we got to cancel your show. So, you know, this is these people knowing how to operate within the system. They say, well, fuck, yeah, I'll come here on your show. You know, what do you want to talk about? And they're sitting there, they know that they're going to be, you know, made a buffoon and everything else like that, but they're not going to let that dictate who they are. They're just going to stay on their message. You know, I'm not going to let anybody do something that's outside of my personality. You know, and I know nobody's perfect. You know, that's I can even go back to the point about artists, is that we're contradictory. So, because we're operating on a different plane. In that plane, there's a different set of rules. This is why I don't mind being fluid across genres, because I'm speaking on everything that I know about. Okay, point eight. I listen to myself and I take outside influence with a grain of salt. You know, everybody has this inner light guiding them to where they need to be. You know, some people call this God or the universe or intuition, and whatever it is, I listen to it. Okay, I know that voice has answers, and It has the answers because it has experience. You know, I've been put through this shit for a reason. And, you know, while others may have experience in whatever they're trying to do, most people don't listen to that. You know, you always hear this, well, I had a bad feeling, so I didn't do it. But they did it anyways. You know, I had a bad feeling and I wasn't going to do it, but then they went and did it. And so I'm not doing that, you know. But on the same token, I'm not saying I don't listen to anybody else. I'm saying I listen to myself. But if I do take outside influence or listen to somebody else, I'm going to take it with a grain of salt. You know, sometimes I don't even listen to that because, as I mentioned in my podcast, one of the things I've learned about life driving through Mexico in a camper is even experts can be wrong. So take it with a grain of salt. This guy told me that everything's fine and, you know, all kinds of people do it. Well, that wasn't the scenario. The second I crossed the border into Nuevo Laredo, it was like fucking from dusk till dawn. You know, and, you know, I was literally looking for when the titty twister was going to show up. You know, the strip club in that movie where all the wacky shit goes on. That's what I felt like when I crossed the border. And what he should have told me was, it's not a good idea to drive a 26-foot travel trailer because the roads are complete shit, or even the good roads could turn into bad ones in a blink of an eye. Yeah, I made it. I dealt with it. But I'm saying this guy was a supposed expert. And if I was an expert, based on my experience, I would not have given that advice. So take it with a grain of salt. Point nine. I think I'm so creative. Why I think I'm so creative is because it makes me happy. I think some of the above listed points, such as the head injuries I sustained, have always put me in a mild state of depression pretty much for most of my life. I don't really wake up stoked to do anything, and I never really have. I mean, it's been a few times where I've been fired up for something maybe new I got into, or maybe I'm going on a trip or traveling. I think when I travel, I'm always happy. That's so fun to me. You know, when I need to get it out of my system. But even sometimes then you get down days because you can't be stimulated 24/7, contrary to popular belief. So I said I don't really wake up stoked to do anything, and I never really have. I mean, I do it in the process. This process that I'm going through now makes me happy. But the endless cycle of going from failure to failure can be deafening. You know, like I said in the beginning, if you wake up every day and all you have to look forward to is fucking up, then, or someone not reciprocating, or you not succeeding in whatever it is, how do you continue with that? You know, how do you get better at that? You just have to know that if you put in the work, you're going to get to a good place. Fortunately, I've been able to do that. I said the only way for me to experience true joy is through creation. I know it's the one thing I can do that will lead me to the right place I need to be mentally. You know, I'm not even going to say I've been blessed. I'm going to say that I've worked my ass off, and that's why I get to do cool shit. But, you know, somebody interviewed me one time, and he talked about, you know, how does the music make you feel and all this kind of stuff. And I told him that nothing is more fulfilling, and it's true. I mean, maybe I'll have a kid one day, and people will say, oh, you know, people always say when you have kids, it changes everything. And I don't dispute that, but that's a form of creation. So, you know, I get that. So if you're having a creation, which is a human, that's basically the process that I enjoy doing. I enjoy the process of creating things. You know, and even the most beautiful women in the world and all this kind of shit, you know, having forays and all whatever kind of shit you want to do, it doesn't get me to a high place. I mean, I know sometimes I've gotten my masters back from or gotten scratch tracks or whatever, some recordings I've done in the studio. And I remember one time I was listening to one of my songs called Behind Enemy Lines. And I just, after I nailed the guitar line on that, I literally thought I was on another planet. I've never felt a sense of elation and total ecstasy by hearing that, because it rang true. Everything aligned between my creative force and the universe and everything, my soul. it was a perfect alignment, but then the alignment, just like an eclipse, it was a solar eclipse. That's what it was. So maybe this is a new thing that I talk about in the podcast, the solar eclipse as it relates to being an artist. And I also call these MIMS, right? Moments in music. And when a moment in music occurs, that's when it's basically when all those things come together at once. And a true, spike is driven into the center of the earth and cracks the core. And because it makes me happy. And yeah, that's why. Point 10. I already talked about this, the grain of salt, but I guess I wrote it down again because I got hit in the head when I was a child. I don't let people influence me. I talked about this in podcast 14. The podcast, the 14 things a real artist does. You know, people in society are constantly trying to impose their will on your reality. And the good thing is you get to choose which parts of this order you want to keep or reject. And, you know, I don't let the opinions or wishes of others influence my work. You know, if I'm creating a product, that's different. I know that there may be certain rules that have to be followed in order to monetize that product, but I will only follow those rules if they provide a return or proven outcome for me. Everything else is up to me to decide, or for others, proven outcome for me or others, period. Everything else is up for me to decide because my process has given me experience that only I have. One that other people's influences and opinions don't. You know, they always say that, you know, don't give your input if you're not prepared to live with the consequences of it. Or don't take advice from people that don't have to suffer the consequences of that said advice. It's true. It's a law. Another law, immutable law, that, like I say, I'm always careful about telling people what they should do because I don't know what they should do. I know what I've done, and I know what's worked for me, but it may not work for you. So, yeah. All right, so point 11, and this pretty much sums it up. And I just say that, you know, why I think I'm so creative is because, you know, I make my own reality, mostly. You know, of course, there's situations I can't control, I mean, every day. But there's plenty that I can. I'm here recording this now for you. I can control that. I can control what I say, you know. I can control, I can't control what you think about it. But that's not why I'm creating. I'm not creating to get feedback. I mean, I said in the beginning of the podcast, it'd be cool to hear what you think and how my thoughts really align. But, yeah, so there's situations I can't control, things I want to do, but I can't, you know, that whole trap or whatever you want to call it. But I think I'm creative because I create my world, and people have told me that. You live in your own world, but, you know, I've been in other worlds with other people that we have our own world that we've created together. I was talking to a chick tonight, and we have our own world. Like, nobody gets that. And that's okay. They don't have to. And that's what being a creative artist and accepting of who we are is about. So, michaelmanicotti.com is the website. Check me out. Everything in this podcast, solely my opinions and all my perspectives. Take it with a grain of salt. Ba-dum-bum-bum, because I'm so creative. Okay, I'll see you next time. Over and out. Boom.